John, tell me if you've yet moved into your home in Surrey.
No, I have not time. The place is empty. You know, there's no furniture, needs decorating, and walls knocking down and things. I'm nowhere near ready. I'll be in next year, probably.
You will be?
Well, I hope before. It depends. That's the longest it'll take, you know, to fix it up.
And, John, they said that you had moved to Empress Gate. Are you moving out of there and into the Surrey home? Is that it?
I've moved from Empress Gate, but not into the house, you see.
I see.
As the success grew, you were installed in Weybridge. Now, you were a homemaker and you did your own arts and crafts and so on, but do you think you would do the same again, or would you get out there into that Beatles world and make your desires known?
Oh, no, because my desires were known anyway. I mean, because I was a homemaker and a mother, I mean, that was what presented itself to me at the time. And I believe that I'd do my best at whatever is presented to me. But I wouldn't have been any different, because I had my standards and my characteristics any more than John had his standards, characteristics. But I wouldn't know. No, I wouldn't have changed a thing.
John, does your wife ever plan to join the show business fold?
No, she's not at all. No. Why should she? She never thought of it before, you know. Why should she now?
Here's a question I asked Ringo. It's a slight bit deep. If you had the chance, which role do you like better? And there are basically two roles in your life. Your job as a Beatle and your role at home as John Lennon, the guy from Liverpool, and John Lennon the Beatle. Which do you like better? It's a tough question to ask, I know.
It's not that tough because they're so intermingled, you know. I'm no different, you see. I don't look upon it as two different jobs. I change a bit when I leave home, you know, because I've got to smile more or something. I don't know.
We all do.
But I could only stand being John Lennon at home for so long, and I can only stand being John Lennon Beatle out on tour for so long. So either one, there's no preference, you know. I couldn't stand living without one or the other, without both of them. I couldn't just be John Lennon at home. It wouldn't work, and it wouldn't work just being John Lennon Beatle, if you know what I mean.
Has your I know exactly what you mean. Has your wife ever seen one of your concerts?
Yeah, she's seen. She used to see a lot of them. She hasn't seen us for quite a bit, though. She enjoys them, but it's so... She gets to see us when we stay somewhere in England and do a show.
You ever get any critiques from her on them?
Oh, yeah. Well, she used to come around with us a lot and say, you're lousy tonight, you know. You're pulling those faces. She doesn't like me fooling around, clowning, you know. She says, why are you always pulling them stupid faces? I don't... On TV, you know, I usually pull some kind of face. She doesn't like that. She wants me to be straight, you know.
John, thanks a lot for talking to us.
Okay, Larry.
The song we like to carry on with now is one which we recorded on an LP that we made. That's English for album, an album that we made. And we'd like you, if you would, to sort of join in and clap your hands, you know, and stamp your feet. Everybody, just join in all together, okay? All right? The song's called I Saw Her Standing There. One,
feel about the songs as they came out? You must have begun to feel that there were messages, signs of another life that he was leading, creeping into.
Well, it was over a period of 5 or 6 years, and a lot of other things were happening at the same time. And a lot of things, I mean, John wrote music with Paul and George and Ringo, and they worked together. So for me, it wasn't necessarily what was happening to John that was coming out in his music, it was happening to all of them at the same time. So I couldn't pinpoint any particular thing, or, I mean, like Norwegian Wood. I mean, I realised afterwards, because I was told why, you know, the reason for writing Norwegian Wood was because, you know, of a little flirtation on the side or what have you. But I mean, at the time, I was fascinated by their music and their progress, and no, I wasn't thinking of messages.
Thank you. But you paint his home life very well. His Aunt Mimi is a very tough cookie. And you show us this boy who was torn between his mother, who he hadn't been able to live with, who was musical and easygoing and fun, and this rather tough aunt who actually ruled his life day by day and never gave him a hug. It must have made you, watching that, all the more anxious to stay close to your own son later as he grew up. I mean, did you see Absolutely. John as damaged by this curious life?
He was definitely damaged, and I think he was damaged for most of his life. I don't think he ever came to terms with the loss and the horror of what happened to him as a child and the lack of love. I mean, he lost all the people that he really loved.
Mm. Because his mother, of course, stayed with her other children. I mean, the other children stayed with her, and Mimi kind of said no, you know, he...
Well, in those days, I mean, there were five daughters, whatever, and they were all matriarchal, and all the husbands were little wimps. You know, they did what the women said, and, of course, Mimi was on her own, she was living with George, but the mother of John was married, of course. The father, Alf, went to sea, didn't come back for years.
Sort of reappeared, Alf Lennon reappeared at a later stage,
well,
didn't he?
Yes, yeah. Made a record. But yeah. So he lost his mother at a time when he was just getting to know her, any more than what happened to Julian when John died.
Alfred Lennon married Julia Stanley. He was born the 14th of December, 1912, and Julia was born on the 12th of March, 1914. And, of course, they produced John Winston Lennon, who married Cynthia, daughter of Charles Edwin Powell. Married the 23rd of August, 1962, at South Liverpool. In your teens, I was hard to live with. And if I had it to go through again, I would still be hard. And you know why, too. You were determined to do things which you knew were wrong, and I was determined that you wouldn't. And if I hadn't been interested, I would have let you do exactly as you like. And you know how those children end up who are allowed to do exactly as they like. Parents, all they want is bingo, pubs. I hated what the Beatles did to you. I don't mean the boys themselves. I expect they were all right in their own particular sphere. But I hated what that 10 years did for you. As soon as you started to make money, your character, your personality, everything was altered. And it seemed as though you hated the sight of me. You couldn't bear the sight of me, and you never missed an opportunity to cut me down dead in front of other people as well, which was even worse. But it didn't do you any good, for people noticed. But you were very kind to Alfred Lennon, taking him round the West End and having him in your home. I don't suppose it ever once crossed your mind that that would hurt me, especially when you couldn't stand the sight of me. For years, I've heard you yelling and shouting about love, but it seemed to me your heart was full of hate, and it showed in your face. I was foolish enough to think, as I'd had you and waited for you to be born, that I was father and mother to you. But my goodness, John, you didn't want me. You didn't want anything to do with me, and a lifetime's work was just thrown on one side as nothing. And you say that Beatles were dumb. They may have been, but in many respects they could have taught you a thing or two. The first thing they did was to make their parents secure forever, knowing very well that they would always get it back. But oh no, you, right, left, center, anyone could have it. And then I had to ask you this year to help me out. A terrible thing for me, I'm telling you, it nearly killed me.
I'll pick up my story where I once left off. I sailed with the tides and lived on dreams. I've watched the sunrise over every ocean.
That's my life, that's my love and my home.
It started in Liverpool, where I was born. No father to advise me, but I carried on. First time I saw the sea, I just knew this had to be.
That's my life, that's my love and my home.
5th of September 1979, tape 1 in the ongoing life story of John Winston Ono Lennon. So I was just remembering the time when I had my hand on my mother's tit in number 1 Blomfield Road in Half Mather Avenue near Glasgow. That's when I was about 14. Took a day off school. I was always doing that and hanging out in her house. And we were lying on the bed and I was thinking, I wonder if I should do anything else. And it was a strange moment.
Mother, you had me, but I never had you.
Can you tell me the story about why you feel Julian didn't laugh much in his youth?
Oh, the reason he didn't. Well, he used to giggle. He was always laughing. He was a happy little boy, always fun-loving and happy. And he went to stay with John and Yoko, and he was giggling at a certain thing that had happened in the kitchen. I think they were making pancakes or something. And John annihilated him, saying that his laughter, don't ever laugh like that again, and don't ever giggle, make that noise again. These are not the exact words, but this
there was more swearing involved, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, I'm trying not to, actually.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, bleep, 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 or whatever you want to hear. But And Julian has hardly ever laughed or smiled since, naturally. And that really devastated him and me. And that was how strong and powerful John's vitriol was at times.
He still doesn't laugh much?
He smiles, but he's not a great laugher. When he was a little boy, he would always be laughing and giggling.
Mm.
And I think that really has affected him strongly. He tries.
He was the father I loved and who let me down in so many ways. After the age of 5, when my parents separated, I saw him only a handful of times, and when I did, he was often remote and intimidating. I grew up longing for more contact with him, but felt rejected and unimportant in his life. Dad was a great talent, a remarkable man who stood for peace and love in the world, but at the same time, he found it very hard to show any peace and love to his first family, my mother and me. In many accounts of Dad's life, we are either dismissed or at best treated as insignificant bit players in his life, which sadly is something that continues to this day. Yet Mum was his first real love, and she was with him for half his adult life, from art college to the genesis of the Beatles to their overwhelming worldwide success. For far too long now, Mum has put up with being relegated to a puff of smoke in Dad's life, and that simply is not the truth. Now, it's time to set the record straight. There's so much that has never been said, so many tales that have never been told. If there is to be a balanced picture of Dad's life, then Mum's side of the story is long overdue. I'm immensely proud of her. She's always been there for me. She was the one who kept it all together, taught me what matters in life, and stayed strong when our world was crumbling.
I was quite amazed that Cynthia did have the courage to loan Ray Coleman some of the letters that John had written to you, which are very revealing, not only because they showed how much he loved you, but how much he loved some other things in his life. There's a line in one of the letters where he says, "I love you like guitars." And I thought that says so much. It shows how much he loved the music as well as yourself.
But it shows you that he was a loving man and a caring man. And so many of the books have portrayed him as a very harsh, cruel, and insensitive man. And John was like all human beings. He was vulnerable. He was an individual. He fought. He had a lot of pain. But above all else, John was honest to his own pain. I mean, he was so honest that it created pain for himself. And I think it's time that somebody said something that was, to John's credit, to John's strength as a man and as a talent and as an individual, as opposed to sensationalizing his life. I've said it before and I can't say it anymore. I just believe in justice in life. And this man cannot speak for himself anymore, any more than Brian Epstein can speak for himself. So I believe it's very important that the people that loved him and knew him say something good for the man